Athens News Matters is sponsored in part by the WUGA Community Advisory Council, dedicated and involved individuals who help WUGA stay connected with our listeners, community organizations, and issues in the Athens area. Learn more at WUGA.org.
Today on Athens News Matters, the groundbreaking work at UGA on rubella vaccine recommendations.
And as a result of our presentation, the WHO now recommends universal introduction of rubella-containing vaccine.
Plus, learning French, the tool that may help make the accent easier to pick up.
Morning Edition takes you across this country and around the world with stories that keep you informed and the context to understand what matters. The news comes at you quickly, but we slow it down to examine each story from different angles and give perspective on what might happen next. A brand new day comes with new possibilities and a new edition of Morning Edition from NPR News.
This is Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. Rubella causes tens of thousands of cases of birth defects a year. Yet, until 2024, the World Health Organization did not recommend the distribution of the vaccine in 19 countries. Dr. Amy K. Winter is a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics in the College of Public Health at the University of Georgia. Her recent research modeling the implementation of the rubella vaccine led the World Health Organization to recommend introduction of the vaccine around the world. In this encore segment, Dr. Winter sat down with WUGA's Emma Auer to discuss her groundbreaking findings. Here's their conversation.
Can you tell us a little bit about congenital rubella syndrome and how rubella spread?
Rubella infection is generally very mild, particularly when children get it. The problem is that when pregnant women become infected with rubella, it can lead to serious outcomes, including stillbirth, miscarriage, or the birth of a child with congenital rubella syndrome, or CRS. And CRS is marked by a triad of birth defects that usually include heart defects, eye problems, and deafness.
So it's pretty serious.
Yeah, it's estimated there's about 100,000 CRS cases annually. And the reality is that the burden has dropped a lot because of rubella-containing vaccine, which has been implemented in the vast majority of countries. And there's only about 19 countries who have yet to implement or have rubella-containing vaccine available into their public sector healthcare system.
And so your recent research models what would happen if the rubella vaccine were introduced in these countries where the vaccine is not yet a part of the regular schedule. So can you talk a little bit about why the rubella vaccine isn't administered in some countries?
So there's been this World Health Organization guidance since the year 2000 that suggests that countries should not introduce the rubella-containing vaccine unless they can confirm that 80% of each birth cohort can be vaccinated. And this guidance is well-founded. It's based on a lot of original modeling work done in the 1980s and 1990s. And it identifies what we call in the field a rubella childhood vaccination paradoxical effect, which means that if you vaccinate children at suboptimal levels, you can actually make the burden worse. You can actually create more CRS cases. And this results because when you vaccinate children at suboptimal levels, you actually increase the average age of infection. So now instead of becoming infected at 5 years old, now you're gonna become infected maybe closer to 10 years old. So you can imagine that pushes the whole entire susceptible population into older ages, which results in more pregnant women being at risk of CRS or having rubella infection, and then having a baby born with CRS. So because of this rubella paradoxical effect, where if you vaccinate children at suboptimal levels, you can actually result in more CRS cases, countries haven't been able to introduce the vaccine yet. But over the years, we've been sort of chipping away at that 80%. Ultimately, it's 80% vaccination coverage. That's the threshold that's been set. And if you don't hit that, then you shouldn't introduce the vaccine. But the scientific body has really been chipping away at the relevance of that 80% coverage threshold, with the general consensus that it's too conservative.
And that 80%, that's for measles vaccination.
So the 80% is ultimately for rubella vaccination, but you're correct. We look to the measles vaccine to determine if when the rubella vaccine is added to the measles vaccine, they'll be able to hit the 80% coverage threshold. So countries look to their current measles vaccination coverage to determine if the 80% vaccination coverage would be met once the rubella vaccine is added.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about the countries that have not introduced the rubella vaccine?
Yeah, they're 19 countries. They're mostly in sub-Saharan Africa, and they make up actually about 10% of the global population, including Nigeria and DRC. So it's a lot of big countries, and ultimately it's this WHO guidance of this 80% vaccination coverage threshold has resulted in kind of leaving that 10% of the population a little bit behind without access to this vaccine.
And can you tell us a little bit about your research and what you concluded?
We conducted scenario modeling as a part of the measles and rubella partnership, myself leading the rubella transmission model at the University of Georgia, and a colleague, Amelia Benecke, leading a rubella model at UK Health Security Agency. And what we did is we conducted a bunch of simulations to determine what happens under different vaccine scenarios. We looked at 18 different vaccine scenarios that included introducing the rubella vaccine at different coverage levels, as well as using different campaign effects. So we looked at what if they had, when they introduced the vaccine, they also vaccinated every single individual in the country up to 14 years old, which is pretty recommended and standard. What if they went and set up to 5 years old? And then what if they had different coverage levels between 80%, or sorry, 60% and 90%? So what we did is conducted the scenario modeling of these 19 scenarios where we simulated rubella transmission. And from each of those scenarios, we determine what's the impact of that vaccination strategy. Ultimately, what we found is that 80% vaccination coverage is indeed too conservative, and that countries who use the recommended WHO vaccination schedule, which includes adding rubella vaccine to the measles vaccine in their routine program, in addition to what we call a catch-up campaign, which is before the vaccine is added to routine, you vaccinate every single person in the country up to 14 years old. And then followed by what we call follow-up campaigns, which is every 5 or so years, a country will again vaccinate everyone in the country up to 4 years old. And that's the WHO recommended schedule. And based on that recommended schedule, we found that no countries are actually at risk of this paradoxical effect, and that CRS burden is both gonna decline at the cumulative across 30 years. And there also is minimal risk that there would be any ever an increase in CRS in a given year.
Can you talk a little bit about the impacts of the study on global vaccine policy recommendations?
We conducted all this scenario modeling at the University of Georgia, and we worked with the measles and rubella partnership, which included colleagues from US CDC, the Gates Foundation, and others. And we put together a presentation of about 2 hours in order to bring to WHO strategic advisory group of experts for a recommendation for the universal introduction of rubella containing vaccine to the remaining 19 countries. So this work was conducted in the middle of 2024, and it was in September of 2024 that we went to WHO SAGE and presented the work. And as a result of our presentation, the WHO now recommends universal introduction of rubella-containing vaccine, which means that the last 19 countries will now have access for Gavi subsidies in order to introduce the vaccine.
What about here in the U.S. And in Georgia? Is rubella eliminated here?
Yeah, as a country, we don't have to worry too much about rubella. And the reality is that it's because the rubella vaccine is safe and so effective. Two doses of rubella-containing vaccine is effective up to 95%. I'm sorry, 97%. So as a result, yeah, we haven't had to worry about rubella too much in this country because we've been able to eliminate it and maintain elimination.
All right. Well, Dr. Amy Winter, thank you so much for your time. This has been fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Dr. Amy K. Winter is a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics in the College of Public Health at the University of Georgia. This is Athens News Matters from WUGA.
Saturday mornings, we're here for you with Weekend Edition. 2 hours of news, interviews, new music, new books, rattling good stories, interesting people, challenging analysis, laughs, air shows, and donkey rides for the kids. So come along with us. Weekend Edition, Saturday mornings from NPR News.
Welcome back to Athens News Matters. I'm Alexia Ridley. A lot of people want to learn another language, but many stop short, worried about nailing the accent. And for languages like French and Portuguese, there's a particular obstacle, the nasal sound. As WUGA's Emma Auer reports, language instructors at the University of Georgia are developing a tool to help students not only master that linguistic challenge, but approach learning another language with confidence.
Alors, on va continuer avec une publicité et on va finir sur ça et après vous ferez le petit quiz.
On a bright winter morning, students pack into a small classroom on the University of Georgia campus. They're here to study French. Dr. Sandrine Zawaki is a lecturer of French at UGA, and she says her goal is not to teach students to sound perfect.
The idea is not to reach a perfect pronunciation, but we feel like if we understand and the message is clear, that's necessary.
But one major obstacle in French and Portuguese is something called the nasal vowel.
With nasal vowels, you actually have air coming out of both your mouth and your nose.
Dr. Madeline Gilbert is an assistant professor in the Department of Romance Languages at UGA. She's looking into making it easier to teach people how to say these tricky sounds. Dr. Zawaki says that currently, the nasal sound is learned little by little as the students encounter them.
The idea is more like repetition, trying to make the repeats as well as they can.
The problem, though, is that there are nasal sounds in English. But in certain languages, like Portuguese and French, there are some nasal sounds that most English speakers aren't used to making. This is where the nasometer comes in.
The nasometer is a very simple machine. There's a little plate on a handle. There's a microphone by the speaker's nose and the speaker's mouth, and so you put the plate up to your face.
The nasometer is a tool that's been used for years in clinical settings to help people with speech difficulties. However, Gilbert and others received a grant from the university to study how it might be used to help students actually see the sounds they're making.
It records the mouth and the nose separately so you can see when you are successfully producing air out of your nose.
The students bring the nasometer to their face and the amount of air coming out of their mouth and nose is visualized, sort of like a heart monitor on a screen. Why does any of this matter? Because saying an oral vowel instead of a nasal vowel, at least in French, can turn one word into another.
They risk actually not being understood. And that's something nobody wants to happen.
Being understood is not just important for practical reasons, like finding the bathroom in a restaurant abroad. It gets right to the heart of how it feels to make mistakes, over and over again.
It's very vulnerable to try and try and try and not know if you're gonna get it. And so I think for a lot of students, it can feel like highlighting something they feel most insecure about when they're learning a language.
UGA senior Donna Cervera is a student of French, hoping to visit Paris one day. She wants to try out the nasometer not to make her into a native-sounding speaker, but to make her understandable. And she says it's a good reminder to embrace the process of learning a language.
Learning languages is not supposed to be something you should be ashamed for.
On a wintry Monday, Cervera visits the UGA Linguistics Lab to try out the nasometer. She speaks two words into the machine, one with an oral vowel and one with a nasal vowel.
Fait.
fall.
Excellent example.
For now, Dr. Gilbert is introducing students of Portuguese to the Nizometer, but she hopes to move to French in the future. Hopefully, she'll create a whole new generation of students who are not just intelligible, but confident. For WUGA, I'm Emma Auer.
Music and visual art inspired one another when local musicians Tracy Brown and Jeff Lustig performed jazz and blues for the inaugural session of Music in the House late last year. The new quarterly program invites local musicians to the Linden House Arts Center and encourages Athenians to stop by to write, paint, draw, and even shape pottery while soaking in the tunes. Here's this postcard from the first evening of Music in the House, produced by Emma Auer.
Done a life drawing in a hot minute, so I actually wasn't sure what to expect. I went into this completely blind, and then when I saw Tracy and Jeff set up, I was like, oh my gosh, this is gonna be an entire musical evening that I can use to inspire my artwork.
But I love the music that they sing, and it really helped relax me, you know. And then it was hard because I had to think of what I wanted to do. But the music, it was really nice to listen to music and paint.
Done this before with other musicians. I go into concerts and I like to use it to springboard my ideas and feed off the environment, and it's just so inspiring.
Tried to get them correct. Beautiful concert. Maybe I'll go home and add some color to it.
You've just heard the voices of Amy Patterson, Cindy Meyer, and Bob Clements, Professor Emeritus of Art at the University of Georgia. They attended the first quarterly session of Music in the House at the Linden House Art Center, where Tracy Brown and Jeff Lustig performed. Music in the House is sponsored by University of Georgia Professor Emerita of Journalism and local novelist Lyra Rhodes, who has made Athens her home for decades. After decades of serving the Athens community, Weaver Dees, known for inspiring one of REM's album titles, closed late last month. And as WUGA's Alexandra Tillman found out, Not even rain could scare away loyal customers ready to get one last meal. She stood in line with them to get their thoughts. Here's that story.
Thank you.
The local restaurant Weaver D's, known for inspiring one of REM's album titles, closes today, February 26th. Folks woke up early to ensure they got one last plate on this bittersweet occasion. The first person in line had been there since 10:15.
I do have banana pudding, everybody. Banana pudding. What you need?
Banana pudding.
Okay.
Despite the rain, loyal customers, first-timers, and prodigal patrons like Yonatan were more than willing to wait in a line that went past the awning and wrapped around the restaurant's driveway.
Last time I went to Weaver D's was like 8 or 9 years old. My dad was a UGA student, and he grew up around the time of like, you know, the big 90s band. Weaver D's was like the place he came. And yeah, I remember, I think it was like pound cake or whatever. Delicious. I think it's going to be the thing I get today. But yeah, this is the place like he grew up with. I don't know, something a little special about coming back for the final day, reliving that like childhood memory.
Owner and operator Dexter Weaver opened the restaurant in 1986, where he has offered home-cooked soul food and desserts for nearly 40 years. Ownership of the property has passed to Joe Nedza, the owner of Batty's Burger House. For WGA News, I'm Alexandra Tillman.
You've been listening to Athens News Matters from WUGA News. The opinions expressed on this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of WUGA or the University of Georgia. This week's show was produced by Emma Auer. If you missed a portion of this broadcast, Athens News Matters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and at WUGA.org. And will be rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8. As always, thanks for listening and stay with WUGA throughout the week for the latest in-depth local news.